Season 3, Episode 14, The Nutty Confessor. It opens up with a very weird conversation. Lesniak goes into the break room where Donna Abadondo is.
Oh my god, yeah.
And out of nowhere basically says, oh, it's a big night for me. And Donna Abadondo bites. This reminds me of a conversation that you'd have with a coworker where they're like, I'm dying to talk about something, but you don't want to talk to them.
All the time.
So, she goes, Donna bites, and she goes, oh, what's up? And she's like, well, I don't want to make this public, but I'm in a relationship with somebody in the squad. And Donna just goes, yeah, Martinez.
Yeah, it's so funny how everyone is, like, trying to be covert with their fucking relationships, but everyone knows who's fucking who, you know?
And she says, yeah, well, we decided that tonight's gonna be the night.
Huh.
Which is a weird thing. I mean, I haven't done this to anyone I know, in particular. It's a weird thing to, one, choose a night that's the night you're definitely gonna have sex, and then, two, to project it out to everyone you know at work. So they have a conversation about what to wear in terms of the nightwear. And they leave the break room, and James Martinez is walking by, and Medavoy, who is nothing but quiet, says, "All mission control, all systems are go." And Martinez kind of like, shut up, Medavoy, jeez. And then Simone is sucked into a conversation with Martinez about the same thing in the locker room.
Yeah, I just find all of this super weird.
You mean to tell me you've never, to one of your coworkers, been like, hey, so what condoms should I use, man? Because I bought both. Which one should I go with and hold them up at work? It's never happened to you?
You bought both?
Well, he's like, I'm thinking about going for the rib.
You just need one.
Well, no, he's talking about styles of condom. Because he was holding...
I know.
No, Martinez is a total double bagger.
A double bagger, wow.
And what's weird is the opening of this episode ends with that question. Which is basically, should I bring out the rib to show that I'm not just worried about myself? And then it's the theme song. Which is like the weirdest way to open an episode. And this is NYPD Blue Balls. The show where the Asher Brothers, I'm Kirk, the other voice is Kyle, go through every single episode of NYPD Blue, and here's the theme song to NYPD Blue. Anyway, Simone and Sipowicz get a DOA, and they go up, and the crime scene is a little janky, because there's stuff written in blood on the walls. There's a 666, there's Jay and Dave, or Dave and Jay, and the guts of the person who died are in the sink. The person who died is a 26-year-old black woman, and the radio was on with some country music, and...
Yeah.
That's basically the only thing, like, those are the interesting things about the room. There's a young...
Oh, he wrote on the wall 666, right?
Yeah, and blood. And Dave and Jay, which is strange. The uniformed cop, that one of them starts giving his theories, and Simone kind of snaps at him asking, did you pick up the case or did we?
I don't know why Simone did that, because he kind of, sometimes he snaps at people and sometimes he doesn't. It's weird.
I think Simone can bring you the sunshine, but he can also bring you the rain. It really depends on what type of Simone you're dealing with that day. It's because now that NYPD Blue is on Hulu, which is a thing to point out to everybody, and I watched his first couple episodes in season 2. Simone is one of the most comforting characters on the show.
Yeah.
And then he's also the guy in, like, his first episode straight up took a dude down in the middle of the precinct. He's multifaceted. He's basically Batman. Anyway,
Batman with a bigger dick.
Okay, well, let's not get into the size of dicks.
That's true. That is true. We don't know Batman's dick size.
We don't. When it comes to that case, they're looking up anybody who may be running away from that building. There was one gentleman who ran with a cut hand, who apparently gave bogus information to NYU Medical Center. Mm-hmm. And I forgot how they got the other guy's name, the guy that actually did it. Spoiler alert, Clyde.
Is it Clyde Bunt? Clyde? No, it's not someone else. Sorry.
Well, essentially, they have reason to believe that this guy, Gordon Puterbaugh, may have done it because he left the building at about 2 a.m. with a bloody hand and then was admitted to a hospital with supposedly faulty information. So they're
His name's not Gordon Puterbaugh.
Yeah, he is.
His name's... No. Wasn't he eating with Mrs. Puterbaugh?
No, he was eating with Miss Patu.
Oh, that's right. Okay, that's... Okay.
But Gordon Puterbaugh, they bring in, and it turns out to be Famous Face.
Adam Scott.
Adam fucking Scott. From Parks and Recreation, from Step Brothers. He's had small parts in a bunch of funny shit, but
he's in a new movie with... he's in a new TV show with Craig Robinson. I forgot what it was called.
Oh, Ghosted? Isn't it Ghosted?
On Fox. Yeah, I guess they're like ghost hunters or something. He fucking looks the same, like he doesn't age.
That's when immediately I looked up Adam Scott's age. Because I thought Adam Scott was way too young to be that old when NYPD Blue came out.
Okay, can I guess how old he is?
Hold on, let me get there so I can answer you in an appropriate...
I thought you looked it up and knew it.
I thought I did too, and I didn't write it down. Okay, Adam Scott.
Adam Scott, I want to say he's like 45.
Okay, because I cannot do quick math. Adam Scott.
No, I meant now, like how old he is now.
Yeah, what did you say again?
I said he is 45 now.
He is 44 years old.
Oh, close.
He was born in 1973.
Oh, damn.
But, like...
And then what year is this? So that would make him what?
He was born in 1973. This came out in 1996.
So he was 23 years old? Wow.
23 years old.
And he looks the same now as he did when he was 23.
Yeah, he doesn't age.
Yeah, he still has a full head of hair. It's crazy.
Essentially, they bring him in because he looks most like the guy. Turns out he's just kind of a weirdo who helps out elderly shut-ins and makes them dinner and spends time with them.
Yeah.
And he cut his hand on a knife while doing the dishes. And the information that he gave to the medical center wasn't incorrect. The copy of it that they got was incorrect. It seemed like something must have happened to the copier, because they go hard on this guy, and he's just kind of, like, really scared and, what's the word? Sensitive and worried.
I don't know. What is the word?
He's like, a sensitive, like, eccentric soul, I would say, and he answers all their questions, and it turns out he's not the guy. Essentially.
Yeah.
Then they get a hit on this guy who plays Clyde. This guy whose name is Clyde, because he was partying with the DOA at Country Western bars. They get most of that information from a DOA's friend from work, who is played by Jenna Elfman.
Yeah, Jenna Elfman, before Dharma and Greg, before she became a crazy weirdo Scientologist.
And she was on another show. Well, she's in the movie Looney Tunes Back in Action, which I just have to say, if I ever get the chance, is one of the worst films I've ever seen.
Well, you did get your chance. So,
but she was also on a show called 1600 Penn with Josh Gad and...
Oh yeah, I remember that.
Was it Bill Pullman?
I remember that show.
And I used to watch that show with my old roommates and good buddies, because we really liked that show, and it was canceled, and we were very sad. But 1600 Penn was a very good show. Also, I forgot to mention Adam Scott, who played Puterbaugh. He was in Party Down, another great show, if you have a chance to see it.
Oh, great show.
So they get the information from Jenna Elfman's character that she started to party. She started taking ecstasy and crazy drugs.
And like look looking for certain types of dudes and shit.
Like, she was originally looking for lawyers, and now she seemed to be like going with crazy dudes. So they go to one of these country western bars. They have a fun moment where the guy clearly tried to hide what was in his jacket. And by taking his jacket and throwing it across the room, acting like that was not strange. And so Bobby picked it up and said, am I going to find something in this jacket? And if so, could you tell us the truth about what's going on? So they get the information on Clyde from this dude. And then it turns out Clyde used one of her credit cards in Atlantic City.
Yeah. Can we talk about how obvious that bartender was?
Yeah, he was not doing a good job hiding.
Like, the best part was is if he would have just left his jacket there, nothing would have happened. Because Simone and Sipowicz wouldn't have been like, wait, why did Simone and Sipowicz wouldn't even have thought of the jacket, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it just would have been like, oh, the guy has a jacket.
What would have been better is if, like, he told them, like, hey, why don't you guys take a seat? And then he, like, moved the jacket over. Instead of moving it, like, to a whole complete section of the bar, just, like, slide it a little farther over from them, but let them sit down. You know what I mean? I don't know.
Also, I'm going to ask you a question about this bar, because it kind of... because I watched this episode, these two episodes, this one and the one before it, three different times. And... because I had some stuff to do that I didn't really need to pay attention to it, so I just threw it on. I don't know why I'm explaining it. But the point is, did you think that this bar was the same exact bar set from the previous episode at the gay bar, and all they did was move the counter?
Yes.
Because it looks like the exact same set.
Yeah.
They just populated it with different people and different shit. But it is, and they didn't even like move the camera to a different location. It was, no. It was insane.
They just changed the music and the decor.
So they get a hit on Clyde, who is using the credit cards in Atlantic City. They go down to Atlantic City. Sipowicz can't go because he has to wait in court.
Yeah.
So they go down to Atlantic City. They kind of track him down, and then there's this standoff in the bathroom. And I don't want to get into a stand-up bit here, but this is one of the reasons we should get rid of those dudes that stand in bathrooms and hand you paper towels. Nothing is more uncomfortable than when I use the bathroom and there's a dude who hands me a towel that I could have gotten myself and is now expecting money for that service. And I'll just play tennis with myself in a wall then. Boom.
What? I'm listening to you. You're talking. Keep talking.
But, you don't experience that or have any problems with that, where, like, you go into... like, I went into the House of Blues in Anaheim, and I used the restroom, and there's a dude there to hand me a towel. All he does is hand towels. I'm not going to tip a dude that all he does is hand towels. Why are you doing this?
He doesn't just hand you towels.
Yeah, that's all he did.
Well, then he's not doing his job, because if you go to, like... if you go to Vegas and you go to a real club,
uh-huh,
and you go to the bathroom, that dude has like a box on. That dude has like a box,
uh-huh,
and in that box is like 30 different types of cologne, a bunch of different types of gum, cigarettes, cigars, different types of lotion, different types of stuff that you can, like, soaps you can use to wash your hand. He gives you the towels, like. What's supposed to happen is, like, when you're done, you can, like, grab a cigarette, and then you can, or you can grab a piece of gum and go back out and do whatever you got to do, and then you tip the man, or, like, you pay him, or, like, you give him, like, $3 for the cigarette or something like that. That's what it's really supposed to be. If there's just a dude standing there handing you towels, that is awkward, yes.
Okay, well, then apparently I don't go to fancy enough places, but I go to places that deem it necessary to have that guy. Because
that's weird.
It's always just a dude with the towels. And, like, just get rid of this guy. If you're worried about people taking too many towels, just put in a fucking hand dryer. Like, it's not that hard.
But it's not supposed to be just handing you the towels. There's supposed to be other things involved.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's supposed to make... and then, like, yeah, there's supposed to be more than just hand towels, I think, that are involved. His job is also, when there's no one in the bathroom... I think their job is to also, like, kind of walk around and make sure that the, the bathroom is clean.
Mm-hmm.
Make sure that there's, like, no shit stains and toilets and stuff like that. So I think he has to do more than just that. You know what I mean?
Fair enough. In this episode, that guy...
why don't you play tennis with that wall, bitch?
So this guy Clyde goes into the restroom, and Simone goes in thinking he'll be in there alone. Clyde takes the bathroom attendant with a knife and walks him.
Takes the hand towel, dude, yeah.
And walks him out to the floor, and then eventually kind of walks himself into a corner. And my favorite part of the repartee between him and Simone is at one point he looks at him and he goes, "You don't dare stop me." And then Simone goes, "Oh, we dare, Clyde. We dare." And I was like, that was pretty awesome. I don't know why. It just made me laugh.
Sometimes the writing is not the best. But.
Oh, we dare, Clyde. We dare. So they eventually get that dude away. And they bring him to New York, and now he's on the crazy bit. He didn't seem crazy when he had the dude at knife point. He was talking like a normal guy who was trying to get out of the situation. But once
when he gets arrested, he starts yelling, "Jay and Dave made me do it," or something.
Yeah, and what he's saying doesn't make any sense. It's just like, even the lieutenant is like, "So do you think the psycho stuff's bogus?" And he's like, "Probably. I need to go convince him that going to jail is better than going to a nut house." And Sipowicz comes back in and essentially hands the floor to Martinez, saying, "You've already built a rapport with him, so I'll just stay out of it." So they go in, and the guy just keeps on the psycho stuff. And that guy, I recognized his face, but I had no idea what it was from. The guy who played Clyde is a dude named Paul Dillon. He was Patty from the original Austin Powers. The dude that was the Irish assassin who tried to kill Austin with his charms.
Yes, with his lucky charms.
That's the only thing I could find that I would recognize him from. Even though I seemed like I knew him from somewhere, the only thing that I could put up a finger on was Patty from Austin Powers.
That's funny.
So he's in there talking about Jay and Dave and Ted Koppel, and he's being fed information through Garth Brooks, and so they run a scam.
Through Garth Brooks.
They run a scam where they put him in a cell with a quotes another crazy person who happens to be Andy, who pretends to be a cannibal, who says things like, "Hey, let's take a shit on the floor. How about you hit me in the face really hard, and then I bite you?"
Yeah.
So then the guy freaks out and says, "Can you get me the bit that you said before?" And he's like, "Yeah, sure, we'll try. We'll talk to the DA," and then get him out of the room. And then Sipowicz sits down on the toilet without his pants on and goes, "Who's hungry?" Like, it was, it was super.
That was one of my favorite parts. Hey, who's hungry?
It was a good one.
Especially after he yelled, like he like tried to bite the guy and shit.
The second case that we're dealing with here, Russell and Medavoy go to a doctor that was shot in the street because a guy pulled him out of his car, stole his wallet and his valuables, and then shot him and stole his car. The dude is kind of an annoying asshole who's demanding to go to a special hospital because if his arm is messed up, he lost his livelihood, which is surgery.
What's his name? City? They keep calling him City?
They call him... Well, his name is... Did I write down his actual name? Because his personal assistant slash secretary slash side trim calls him City. And it becomes very clear that he came over to her apartment to fuck her. And then he was robbed.
To drop off the paperwork.
Yeah, to drop off some paperwork. Yeah, totally. His name's Sidney Herman. And he was there to see Dale Epton.
Yeah, that was his secretary.
Yeah, Dale Epton was the secretary. Sidney Herman, he looks like a... His face has just the look of someone you've seen in a bunch of stuff. He's been, like, on a bunch of television from the past. And apparently Jack and Jill and Beverly Hills Cop. But I can't put my finger on a specific one where he jumped off the screen. But he's complaining that he's been shot, his livelihood's ruined. The detectives tell the EMT, like, just take him to the hospital he wants to go to. So he'll quit bitching. And... they learn, okay, they're obviously in an affair. He came over on a day that they're not open to drop off paperwork. Yeah, so they then there's an awesome scene because a woman walks into the station house and Abbandando's on the phone, and the woman then pounds on the desk and says, "Are you going to put that person on hold so you can talk to me?"
Yeah.
Nowadays, in our culture of memes, this is a "let me see your manager" woman.
Oh, yeah.
A "let me see your manager" mom. One of these women who think, "I need to be serviced immediately and everything else needs to stop because I am in need of something." She then claims she wants to press charges against Dale Epton, you know, the woman that her husband is fucking. And because if he wasn't fucking her, he wouldn't have been out there to be shot. And she's acting like a bitch, and Medavoy's like, "I'm sorry, we can't do that. That sounds silly." She asks for his supervisor, and Fancy says the same thing. Then she goes into meltdown mode, which is what these people do when they don't get immediate service. And then Abbandando delivers the line, "How do you expect anyone to help you if you treat them like something the cat dragged in?" And then the woman said, "Well, look, I may not have a marriage, and now my husband may not be able to work, so what am I supposed to do?" And Donna Abbandando said what we all wish we could say to those people: grow up.
Yes.
And then the "let me see your manager" woman says the same thing they all say, which is, "I'm going to get that bitch fired," and then leaves. Luckily, we never hear from her again. They run down some leads about who could have done this, because they find the wallet in the possession of this one guy who's like, "Oh no, that wallet was dropped off by a guy named Clarence." He goes to this barbershop where they play dice. They go to the barbershop while they're playing dice. There's a guy there who is, I don't remember his character's name, but he's an old black gentleman, and it was played by Bill Cobbs, who is a famous face. You've definitely seen him in a bunch of things, but the thing I remember him from is the old police officer in Demolition Man. Don't know if you've seen that as much as I have.
Yes. I was trying to remember Demolition Man. I forgot that he was in it. Yeah, he plays, because when Sly comes back, they know each other.
Yeah, because he was the young helicopter pilot when Sylvester Stallone went into cryosleep, and then he's just a desk officer when he comes out of cryosleep in New St. Angeles. That's a very odd movie. A good How Did This Get Made movie, but an odd movie. Wow, where was I going with that? Oh, they track down Clarence because of this guy, because this dude says, "Hey, you know, I may have gotten some trouble with Vice, who has my car. If you can get my car for me, I'll tell you where Clarence is." He got busted for cough medicine and bad parking tickets.
Yeah.
So
he doesn't remember how those got there.
No, of course he doesn't.
Or he doesn't remember how the label got scratched off, I think is what he says, which is kind of funny.
He also does a really good job playing this character because He's at the craps or dice. I don't know the difference. I've never played him. But he is playing the game, and he walks through the barbershop. He's like, "Hey, man, don't you have tickets to write? Why do you got to hassle people like this? This is ridiculous." But then once they get to the door, he's like, "Okay, let me talk to you for a second."
I thought it was kind of weird how quickly, I don't know. And then he was like, "Yeah, I can't talk. I don't want to create a scene in there," or something like that. It's like, well, they're going to wonder what took you so fucking long to come back inside.
Yeah, I thought that too. Like, especially because he's like, "Man, don't you got tickets to write?" And before he closes the door on the place, he's like, "Hold on, let me talk to you."
Yeah, and then he goes, and then he straight up leaves with them.
Yeah.
So he straight up gets in the car with them to go be an eyeball witness or whatever, you know? And it's like, wait, bro, like, you can't just do that.
Yeah, they
your
needed.
Friends are gonna wonder where the fuck you're at.
They needed visual confirmation from him when they go to the meth center or methadone clinic that the guy picks his stuff up from. I'm sure what he told him is like, "Oh, they got me for disorderly or impending an investigation, then they let me go just to show that they could or something." I'm sure he talked his way out of it, but
yeah,
he did a good job. From that information, they get the guys. and the guy picks, they get Clarence, the gentleman who was robbed picks him out of a lineup. Then when they're walking in the hallway, he basically says, okay, we'll get a call into Scottsdale and make preparations. And then his side trim is like, what do you mean you're going to Scottsdale? And then creates a problem in the hallway of the entire precinct, which was pretty hilarious.
Yeah.
Now, the most important story of this episode, the real reason we're all here, when they bring in George Peterbaugh, which is Adam Scott, Martinez and Lesniak start talking about their date while in front of him.
Yeah.
And basically are like, hey, I don't know if we should even get dinner. And he's like, oh no, you just want to head right out? He's like, yeah, I just want to be as close to you at, as soon as I possibly can.
Yeah. And I just want to be together. I just want to, like, they start being, like, super weird and gross.
And then Adam Scott's character is like, I'm sorry, my life's turned upside down, and you guys are talking about your evening plans?
It's pretty funny.
It was a good one. And in the middle of the episode, they have their date, which is awkward as shit. In the middle of the episode, they go on their date.
Okay, can we talk about how awkward that was?
Yes, that's exactly what I said after I said they went on their date. It was awkward
I didn't hear that part, sorry. That was fucking weird. How they, like, as soon as they get up in the stairs, they're kind of like, just talking about fucking each other.
Okay, let's break down the awkward points completely. Number one, they bring in the food, they put it on the table.
Yeah.
Then they're like, do you want to eat now or do you want to eat later? And he's like, oh, we can eat later, I'm not hungry now. And she's like, yeah, because it's not like when we go out, we have to eat on their time. And then he's like, and then he starts making jokes that aren't funny.
Yeah.
He makes jokes that are not objectively funny, and she starts to laugh hilariously like they are, which is immediately uncomfortable.
Yes.
Because she's like... He's like, yeah, it's not like a late reservation or having to tip waiters or deal with other diners. And she's like, ah, I'm like, what's funny? That's like, he's stating facts about the decision you've made. Nothing is hilarious.
Yeah.
And then she's like, do you want to do the other thing now? He's like, you can say have sex. Like, you both know what's happening. It's different at work. Like,
it's like that thing. Every time I watch this episode and I see, and this happens, it always takes me back to that running joke in Arrested Development when George Michael and maybe he thinks like George Michael's about to have sex and he's like, yeah, Pop Pop's in the attic, and he's like, son, if you have to call it Pop Pop, then you're not ready for it. And it's kind of like, that's what I think about them. Like, if you guys can't both say you're about to have sex, or like, should we have sex, then I don't think you guys are ready to do it. You know what I mean? Like, and, I don't know. It was just funny to me.
And so then they go into the room, right? Slowly. And he even goes, here's the thing. So if I was about to have sex with a woman and I'm super jazzed, I wouldn't have then said, hey, but isn't your dog in there? Because that sounds like you're putting up a barrier for your own session.
Yeah.
He's like, well, isn't what's-his-name in there? And she's like, no, I took him to my mom's. He's like, oh, that's why I don't hear him panting and running into walls. And it's like, this is not good bedroom talk. And then they get into the bedroom, and they start kissing, and... then she takes off her shirt, and she mentioned earlier, like, I went to Victoria's Secret and I got a bra and panties and a teddy, and we see the bra and I was like, and that's what you went with? Like, this is the bra that's gonna, like, get everything moving? Or did you not get into that situation?
And then didn't earlier in the episode, didn't Abundando say, like, hey, don't even worry about the teddy, it just gets in the way?
Yeah, she did. She said,
something like, oh, don't even worry about the teddy, just wear the underwear and then you guys can get right down to fucking.
Right down to fucking. And then when, like, they lay on, like, she's like, could you take off my bra? And he goes, is that a front loader or back loader? It was like, the most unsexy thing a dude could say about anything. And then, And then he takes off her bra so we could get some side boob. Some NYPD blue side boob.
Is that a front loader or a back loader?
And then they lay on the bed and she goes, ow. And he's like, I'm sorry, my belt buckle. I am not a aficionado on sexual interaction. I would find it weird if she is now naked on the top and he is still fully clothed. He still has all of his clothes on.
Well, Kirk, no one wants to watch a sex scene where the guy has his clothes off, okay? Especially if it's Martinez.
And, I mean, I'm going to say it. I'm going to throw down the gauntlet. The worst sex scene and lead up to sex scene of NYPD Blue so far. And
I'm with you on that.
Haven't we gotten to the point where... Maybe we haven't. I don't know if I should say it. But haven't we gotten to the point where Sipowicz gets a reach around from...
From Sylvia.
Yeah. And that was less awkward than this. Mm-hmm. Oh, gosh. It was bad.
Yeah. It was, he was in the bathroom and not wanting it. And she comes in and tugs on his wiener. whereas, they both want it and it's still awkward as fuck.
Oh, my God.
It's kind of funny.
So, and it doesn't end there. They go back to work. And when they walk in, like, here's the thing. It's super awkward because at one point before they had sex, Sipowicz looks at Simone and goes, isn't this the day where Martinez and Lesniak go to the rack? And Simone says, if Medavoy knew the plans for D-Day, we'd all be speaking German.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the line I thought was the best of the of the whole thing was when... Yeah, when someone gives them shit for it. It's so funny.
And then, after they have sex and they come into work the next day, everybody's like, hey, James, how you doing? And nobody's saying it out loud, but every single person in that office is like, so what was it like fucking Lesniak, bro? Give us the deets. And then Lesniak comes in, she's like, isn't it a great morning? And it's like... No one's keeping it cool. The only person that doesn't know is Fancy, who asks for the rundown on the cases and doesn't even acknowledge it. And then, Kyle, the weirdest thing about this episode happens.
Uh-huh.
Simone asks Martinez to go to Atlantic City to pick up Clyde. And Lesniak sees him put his coat on and goes, oh, you are leaving? He's like, yeah, I gotta go with Simone to Atlantic City to pick up a perp. And she goes, when will you be back? And just the look on her face was, like, insta-crazy.
Oh, yeah. It's like, it's kind of like right after he removed his penis. It, like, you know how you buy things and they're like, you need to remove this tab for it to work?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of like right after he removed his penis, like, her crazy battery connected. And she just went nuts.
Her crazy battery connected.
Because, like, he's literally going on, like, a job assignment. And she's like, where are you going? How long are you going to be? When are you coming back? And he's like, oh, you think he's going down to AC to fuck a little bit and then come back? I don't know.
It's also weird because it's the day after they had sex. And then he's like, oh, I'm going to Atlantic City to pick up a perp. And now she's acting like... Oh, so he's going down to Atlantic City to meet other women. And he's like, well, what? Like, it's the morning after. Like, what are you talking about? Also, this isn't even my case. I'm going to help Bobby. What are you freaking out about? And then, at the end of the episode, there's a little chat sesh with all the detectives about the day. Where they mention how Andy pretended to be crazy to get the guy. And Medavoy brings up the black box guy, which is an older episode. It's a reference to an older episode that was pretty sweet, where Medavoy pretended to be a grifter to get a grifter to admit his crimes. And he goes, remember that, Adrian, when I did that? And she's like, yeah, the black box guy.
Yeah, she's kind of a dick about it.
And then the entire room feels this cold wind. And Martinez is like, let's go. And she's like, I didn't mean to rush you, though. And then even earlier in the day when she's like, I sounded a little possessive there. I'm sorry. It's just, I when I get super excited about what's going on, I don't want anything to happen. He's like, okay, cool. And then when she freaks out at that point, he's like, no, you didn't force me out. It's all good. And as they walk down the stairs, Simone, Russell, Medavoy, and Sipowicz look down at him and kind of give him like a, well, you're fucked face. And then the episode ends.
Yep. And it's really funny because I really like the shot because it's like an upward shot of the staircase. Uh-huh. And all four of them are just looking down and they all have this look of like, well, that's the end of Martinez. Martinez's life. It's not like how everyone was acting when Simone and Russell hooked up. You know, it wasn't like that at all. But it was just kind of funny.
I'm going to look through my notes to see if there's anything to say. Is there anything from this episode you would like to mention?
No. You mentioned the thing that I liked. You mentioned the thing I want to talk about, the whole D-Day thing and speaking German. I thought that was really, really funny. Well, that was it, yeah. I thought this episode was cool. I mean, I'm just over fucking Martinez and this bitch. I really don't like her acting, but, you know, it is what it is.
It's really a bummer how this episode opens up saying, hey, a really big plot point is going to be these two characters that don't really have the chemistry that our other romantic pairs have. Mm-hmm. Even Medavoy and Donna, even though it was weird, it felt like more chemistry than this.
Yeah.
The episode opens up where it's like, hey, those two people that are, it's kind of awkward to even see them together, those people are going to have sex.
Yeah.
It was a weird way to start. It was a weird way in the middle to throw in your side boob. And it was a weird way to then basically explain, this bitch is crazy. But, you know, solid episode. Some fun stuff otherwise, like the Clyde stuff and...
Yeah, that part was interesting. And then, like, his interview was interesting, how he was acting crazy and shit. Like, that was cool. But, yeah, that was interesting, but... Oh, Martinez and Lesniak having sex is, unnecessary.
Kyle's official review, ugh, unnecessary. Anyway, every episode of NYPD Blue Balls is on AstroBrothersPodcast.com. It's also linked through MixedBagOfHats.com. It's also on iTunes. It's on Stitcher. It's on wherever you find a podcast. We're on Twitter at AstroBrosPod, Instagram AstroBrothersPodcast. You can talk about the show there. If you want to talk about specific episodes, I try to put in notes at the end of them. Thank you, and have a good one. NYPD Blue's on Hulu, so get Hulu and start watching, so you can be there with us to talk about every episode of the best show ever, NYPD Blue, and have a good one. Thank you once again for listening to NYPD Blue Balls. New episodes are every other Tuesday here on AstroBrothersPodcast.com, MixedBagOfHats.com, iTunes, Stitcher, where you find a podcast. If you need more NYPD Blue, you can always check out True Blue, written by David Milch and Detective Bill Clark. You can also check out Gene Kendall's book, An Unofficial Guide to NYPD Blue, where he goes through every single season of NYPD Blue. And now, it's official. We've said it before, we've said it again. We're going to say it probably forever, as long as it's up there. NYPD Blue is on Hulu now, so you can watch every single episode of NYPD Blue on Hulu. You could also watch every single episode of The Twilight Zone. They got tons of stuff. It's just a monthly fee, and you could be watching the show we're talking about. It's the best. So go check it out. You can even have, like, a weekly trial or something. I'll give you the real details if they start paying us for these free advertisements. But they probably won't, but it's still there. Hulu, NYPD Blue. Be good to yourself, be good to each other. Peace!